This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Are these penalties all on the offensive line, or are there other parties culpable in these? We'll get to that. We'll get to D'Amico Ryans on his coach's show earlier this week in just a second. Boy, I didn't know that so many people would weigh in on which coach told Diana Rossini that success is like a martini. It relaxes you, and that's when you can get into trouble. End quote. The implication from our list being that it had to be a coach that enjoys several martinis.
Well, or maybe had a father who was a drinking issue or something, so he watched it from afar. But yeah,
Bruce Arians is getting a lot of love for this.
Yeah,
now
Arians
page.
Is a guy that enjoys a drink, and probably also maybe he's gotten a little too relaxed at times.
Yeah, could be.
That sounds like a Bruce Arians thing.
Yeah,
this is somebody who ever said that. It's a nice little analogy. I've been going to the Jeff Van Gundy well for far too long. The do not ignore in victory what you would address in defeat. Mm-hmm. I like the martini one a lot better.
Steve Mariucci, definitely, somebody says. I don't know about that.
That sounds like something Mariucci would say. I don't know if he's a big drinker or not, but it sounds like something he would say.
Lou Holtz, somebody said.
It maybe sounds the most like Lou Holtz.
Success is like a martini. It relaxes you, and that's when you get into trouble.
Yeah.
I could definitely see him
saying
that.
And then he links it to Hitler.
Yeah. He did do that.
Well, Hitler
one time.
Was amphetamines, but
he did do that one.
He made
time.
He made a leadership
analogy.
Ill-advised leadership analogy with Hitler.
Yep,
I knew what he was driving at. It made sense. You just don't do it,
right? You just don't do it. Mike McDaniels, no, I would say maybe edibles for Mike McDaniels, not a martini.
Yeah, well, Mike McDaniels though, he's a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah, that's true.
He cites his drinking issues as the reason that Gary Kubiak fired him.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and he says that in a way that's very, you know, it's not like angry at Gary Kubiak firing him.
He deserved to get fired at the time.
So McDaniels would know from personal experience, but also it seems like the kind of, this still feels more like too much of a middle aged. The fact that you bring up a martini, like that's, yeah, even in drinking martinis, it's not something that people in many generations have done just sitting at home sipping a martini.
Right.
It might be the drink you get at a bar because you want to feel sophisticated or something.
Dan Campbell, somebody said. No chance it was Dan Campbell.
No.
No chance.
Dan Campbell would say something like, it's like hitting your PR on bench.
Campbell,
and you think like, yeah.
Campbell,
but then you're like, whoa, man, I didn't turn in my math homework.
His ethos is all about the energy level, not the creative analogies or things and things like that.
Right,
you know?
He's not
about the coming up with the good metaphors.
Bite a kneecap off.
Right. Like I said,
success is like biting a kneecap.
Yeah.
It'll make you feel good for a little bit, but then there's always more kneecaps to bite.
Well, there are. Well, there's two.
The example he used in that one, I think they were three kneecaps.
There was a third
kneecap.
Didn't
he go to a third kneecap?
He did. Yeah.
Some mythical beast that he was fighting in his mind. Yeah.
Great coach. Not the brightest light on the Christmas tree.
I honestly sounds a little bit more like an acid head who tend not to be very violent people. And yeah,
are you going to eat that third kneecap?
Bite a kneecap off?
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to D'Amico Ryans, someone who definitely knows how many kneecaps are in the human body. This was D'Amico Ryans on his coach's show looking for the Texans. This was a question about penalties in the Texans. Take a listen to this.
Yeah, for sure. You want to cut down on, you know, the things we can control, like false start, jumping off sides, those things we can't control. Some of the penalties that get kind of thrown on the offensive line aren't always the offensive line, like a couple of those with where CJ has to get the ball out quicker, right? So we're not downfield. We got illegal man downfield a couple of times, not really on the offensive line. That's on us.
Mm-hmm.
Structurally, right? Offensively, get the ball out quicker, get us in the right play call on the cup. So penalties are a team thing, but the ones we can't control, we definitely have to control those.
Right, and the false starts, I know there's the whole process where the center is not sometimes making the calls, or the whole procedure is a little wonky, and that's where Laremy Tunsil tries to excuse himself while claiming that he's taking responsibility for it. He says, well, my name is the guy that's getting called, so I have to take responsibility for it. Like, all right, that sounds like accountability, I guess.
And then in the next sentence he says, but it's a whole team.
Right. So Laremy, it's hard to make excuses for Laremy because he is operating at 4.5 times his normal clip when it comes to committing penalties.
How prolific.
Yeah, not just the false starts, but penalties in general. He's got 11. He's leading the league. He's very prolific this year.
Yep.
He's got 11 penalties, which would put him on pace for 45 penalties. That's a lot. That's a lot. That's way more than his normal run. It's been really, really bad for Laremy.
I wasn't really listening for this too much last year with D'Amico because it was the first year and it was a honeymoon period and things like that.
Yeah.
And I have no, what I'm about to say, I have zero issue with D'Amico doing. But this is the second time that I can remember in the last week or so where D'Amico has specifically pointed out by position, in this case by name, because he's your only quarterback that plays, someone that needs to do something better in interviews. You know, like in interviews, he's the defensive line, the interior of the defensive line, he pointed out specifically that they were not doing their job in the run game against Minnesota.
Right.
In that cut we played right there, he's talking about something CJ has to, specifically something CJ has to do better.
Yeah, and I think probably in D'Amico's mind, you think about both those position groups that he called out, the quarterback and the defensive tackles there. He didn't call them out by name, but that's a veteran bunch, the defensive tackles. I think, and then in calling out CJ Stroud, a little bit of that is maybe like Bill Belichick would rip Tom Brady in front of everybody, and then everybody would realize, okay, well, if he's going to rip Tom Brady, then I'm certainly not immune to
it. And Brady wanted that.
Right. Yeah, Brady was cool with it. I think with D'Amico, he's not going to do it in the same style or manner as Bill Belichick, but yeah, that might be a little bit of where the accountability is coming back into it. Like, listen, we're not just picking on the guys that are the most glaring examples or whatever. We're going to coach all of you up like this, and it is interesting that he chose to call out CJ my name before he called Laremy Tunsil out by name. But,
sometimes you look at how it gets handled by the person you're talking about.
Right, I know, but that's the whole thing. Like, the point is, you should be able to call out anybody, and I wonder how comfortable they feel calling out Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah, it would appear not very, just based on how things have gone the last several years.
Yeah.
It's not a 2024 problem.
Listeners, remind me if I'm forgetting a point where D'Amico has said something specifically about Laremy Tunsil this
year. My guess is CJ has less than zero issue with what D'Amico just said. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but the point being, if you're going to follow through on it, it's that, yeah, you can call out Tom Brady, but then you call out everybody else. Okay, if you call out CJ Stroud, then you should be able to call out Laremy Tunsil, too.
Hopefully there's no reason to this week. That would be nice, right? That would be nice if we got to come in on a Monday after a game. That's what I really want, is I want to win, but I want to win where there's the whole post-game show isn't, yeah, but.
Right.
Now the Bills are a good enough team. You think about the three teams the Texans have beat. The Colts, and the way the Colts played that day, which is basically just three gigantic pass plays and a block punt. The Bears, who are not a good football team, and then they beat the Jags, who are the only winless football team still left. I would hope that the Bills are a good enough team that this will be the first game for Texan fans maybe afterwards that who cares how it looks.
Even if it's an ugly victory.
Who cares?
Or
it's
whatever.
The Bills, because mathematically it means so much to you as well.
And I think even if the Bills aren't as dominant as they looked in the first three games of the season, they're still a good, solid football team, and they've got Josh Allen at quarterback.
Yes.
There are a lot of things defensively that I think the one thing the Bills' offense hasn't been able to do is have a lot of explosive plays downfield, or as many as they would like. The Texans' defense has been a mixed bag in that regard. They've had some really glaring errors. I mean, if Josh Allen were the quarterback of the Jaguars, take the exact same team, the Jaguars, I think, beat the Texans, and it might not even be that close.
Might beat them by 10. Yeah.
Like, you can't have Kamari Lassiter letting guys run downfield unchecked twice in that game. Josh Allen would have won that game. So, just by beating Josh Allen on what is also a better football team in total than the Jaguars are. I don't care if it's a last-minute field goal. I don't care if it's sloppy or ugly-looking. That's a quality win that you would have expected before the season was going to be a slug-out anyway.
Hey, by the way, your guy Kamari Lassiter?
Yeah.
Up to third on the odds board.
For Rookie of the Year.
For Defensive Rookie of the Year, yeah.
Can't face Trevor Lawrence every week, Kamari.
Yeah.
Here we go. Hop to it.
Up to third.
Got some Josh Allens of the world coming up. We got a Pat Mahomes in the mix. There's a Lamar Jackson down the road.
He's behind only Jared Verse, who is the favorite right now. Rams, right? Jared Verse, I think, from Florida State. Leatu Latu from the Colts is still second at plus 525. Best defensive player in the draft.
Best pass rusher
in the draft. And then Kamari Lassiter holding steady at 8-1. So your payout is still the same as it was last week.
40-1.
You're at 40-1. You're 40-1. That's right. Yeah, you're 40-1. Oh, man, look at Seth C. Payne, man.
I got a lot of futures bets out there. I got to go check on them.
Do you
see.
Really? Yeah. That's the only one I know about.
I'm a novice gambler, Sean. That's what we're suckers for, is the futures
bets. That's true.
In parlays. Right? I'm not a sucker for parlays. I know enough about math to know how stacked it is against me in the parlay.
Yeah.
And it's
and I still do
a trapping of human psychology that you think, hey, the old Bill O'Brien method of general managing was the parlay method. Like, hey, all we have to do is this crazy contract, and then this crazy trade, and then this crazy contract. Right. And if all these things work out, glory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nico Collins up to fourth on Offensive Player of the Year odds board. Saquon Barkley number one, plus 450. Derrick Henry went from 40-1 to 5-1.
Oh, wow. That's a big leap off of one man.
That was a big game.
Yeah.
Justin Jefferson 3, Nico Collins 4.
Well, look, Derrick Henry, the whole thing about Derrick Henry, and he got a slow start off to the season, that game looked a lot more like what you'd expect, which is, all right, you've got Lamar Jackson, who you have to be concerned about the deep threat. He's a running threat himself, which creates an extra gap on the defensive front for the running back. And that all came to fruition in a big way against the Bills. That's why I'm so excited about Joe Mixon potentially coming back. Mm-hmm. The Bills, much like the Texans, they're kind of a lightweight defense. I don't mean that like lightweight and bad, but they're actual body weights. Mm-hmm. If you add up all 11 body weights, they're light when they're out on the field, just like the Texans. That creates issues in the run game at times. And we saw that with the Ravens. So Joe Mixon being back this week, going against the defense and the Bills, that does a very good job of limiting explosive plays. Everything that teams have been doing against the Texans, including like the Jaguars mixed it up from what they normally do and played more conservative zone coverages. This is what the Bills do. They don't blitz a lot. They just play good, sound, aggressive defense. And they've got a lot of athletes, but they're kind of light. So Joe Mixon is a huge, huge factor this week.
Big time. Big time. Text message circling over to the Astros. What the Astros again between now and the end of the show. If you missed it, Seth and I did our first hex of the postseason. We hexed Tyler Holton, their opener today, with the hopes that the Astros jump on him early, get some runs, and win the game, man. Astros season hanging in the balance. Text message on the Astros. Haven't heard y'all talk about the Peña bunt in the ninth inning, staying out of the double play, which the Astros hit into a lot. Peña, actually, for a fast guy, hits into a decent amount of double plays also.
Yeah.
We had not brought up that aspect of it, of the bunt, but you and I were both pro-bunt in that situation.
We were pro-bunting, but that is one extra added argument to why we were pro-bunt. Yeah, I'll act like in the moment I thought, oh, yeah, and you avoid the double play threat with Peña.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I was more thinking about Peña on the day and the way he'd been hitting or not hitting specifically, and his ability to actually bunt, and then also your best option at maybe not even getting it out there with a successful bunt.
Yeah.
Or creating an errant throw because the catcher and the pitcher also know that Peña is a threat to get to first. So I was in the moment, you know, you and I have a policy of in these moments, we make our decision before we find out the outcome.
Right.
So like if it hadn't worked out, I still would have said, all right, I'm cool with him doing it in that moment.
Especially because the next three hitters hit a line drive, got a walk, and hit another line drive. Like the next three hitters all had great at-bats after that. It just didn't work out.
The one thing that I'm second-guessing myself is bringing Josh Hader in the ninth inning, which I was adamantly against at the beginning, partly because they put up that stat of
1 in 538.
Yeah, that only one team in 539 opportunities in the postseason has come back from a three-run deficit in the ninth inning.
Three or more runs since 1990.
We're not sure we believe that stat, and we haven't had anybody confirm it or shut it down to us. But let's say that is the actual stat. I feel like it's overly aggressive. If that's the actual stat, if that's what the analytics are telling you and everything, like how hard it is to come back, I would say don't waste Hader in game one. And because it's going to be improbable no matter which way you cut it. Bring in another good reliever that still gives you a chance, but you know doesn't potentially have Hader pitching three straight
games. If there's a save situation in either of these next two games, Hader has to be in there.
Yeah.
And that means that in game three, he'll be pitching 3 days in a row. Now, I don't know. I mean, Hader's been a workhorse this year, yeah. So maybe he's fine with it, and you get a day off after that. You don't play till Saturday if you win the series, and then you don't play again on Sunday because, yeah. You know, the way the ALDS sets up, there's a lot of days off for the
our friend from Detroit that's been texting all morning,
yeah.
Who seems to think that a 1-0 lead in a wild card series is insurmountable.
I think he thinks that it's still only a 1-game wild card is what it feels like.
I know.
In 2015 with the Astros.
Oh, he promises he's going to call in tomorrow after they clinch.
Oh, yes. Good luck with that. Yeah, okay. Cool.
So that guy's still alive, at least. So
for now.
I didn't use the hex on him.
No, you just wish death on him, that's all.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't involve... That's not as serious as the hex.
Go
the hex
die,
is effective.
Everybody.
Yeah.
The percentage success I have on wishing death upon people is alarmingly and disappointingly low right now. I thought for a little while I might have some superpower or something
like
that doesn't work. It's only like
36%.
I mean, everybody that I've said go die to will eventually die, yeah. But not with the... Not with the same urgency level that I'm expecting.
That you're hoping for. Yeah. Right. No, I understand. I get what you're getting at. So we were both pro. We say all that to say we were both pro bunt. There were way more positive outcomes with Pena bunting there than there would have been with letting him swing in that situation. All right. Devontae Adams is a big story this morning. The Raiders, at least it's been reported, the Raiders are willing to move on from Devontae Adams. The odds are out already on where he's going to land. The Texans are way down the list. We're not going there. But if Devontae Adams lands at a couple of these other places, I think it becomes a little more problematic for the Texans. We'll let you know who the favorites are. We'll do that coming up next.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. Right,
there is a long-form article that ESPN just dropped moments ago by Jeremy Fowler, senior NFL national reporter.
Ooh, senior.
Where he talks to 12 different sources.
Ooh, 12?
Yeah, 12 different sources about what went wrong between Stephon Diggs and the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, there was an issue there?
Yeah, I don't know if you know. It just wasn't just one of these things where they're like, hey, we love each other. I'm going to hug you, but can you send me to Houston, please?
Yes.
So he talked to a bunch of people. I say all that to say I'm going to do my best during the break between now and the last segment to see if I can pull out any good nuggets from this thing as we head towards Diggs v. Buffalo reunion this weekend.
The drama so far doesn't seem to be all that much. I haven't seen a lot of people trying to create rifts where – there haven't been any public rifts or anything. The closest we got was a couple weeks ago when Josh Allen, in complimenting his own receivers and talking about how it's awesome because nobody cares who gets the credit. Remember after the Jags game, he had thrown the ball to like an impossible number of different targets. People interpreted that as, oh, yep, see, taking a shot at Diggs. But other than that, which he came out and clarified the next day, we haven't seen anything. I do think at some point this week, both of those guys will say something positive about their own teammates, and it will be interpreted by an aggregator account or something as Diggs throwing shade at Josh Allen.
Well, I'm going to try to find some things in this article during the break, just to, you know, if there's anything that can kind of get those fires going a little bit. What you should know is if you read this story, if you're looking for it, Jeremy Fowler spoke to a dozen team, front office, and industry sources.
Oh, industry sources.
Team in front, and a team source could be a reporter that follows the team.
The team source would be like, it might be a front office employee or something.
I say that because a couple sentences later, he said, "What lies beneath, only the principals can say." Diggs declined comment for this story, as did the Bills.
Yeah.
So the Bills as a team declined comment for this story. So I'm guessing a team source is somebody who's just close to the team, not employed by the team. I don't know. So, yeah.
Well, no, I don't want to get into this, but like the team would be just the official spokesperson or whatever declined to give a comment. But like that does, they said actual people on the team, did they not? They said
team sources, anyway, industry sources, front office sources. We'll know. Yeah. All I'm saying is Diggs himself has not commented on this, and it seems like the Bills are at least coy about commenting on it.
Yeah.
The one quote I see from a team source, tremendous player, but the offense didn't need him anymore, mm-hmm. end quote. So there you go. Devontae Adams is the Raiders are reportedly open for business in trading Devontae Adams. Here was Devontae Adams yesterday on Kay Adams' podcast, asked if he's played his last snap as a Raider.
What I'm hearing is that a lot of people think you may never play another down as a Raider. What would you say to that?
All I can control is this talk we're having right here, and then after we're done with this, all I can control is the next thing that I'm on to. So I'm gonna get up in a minute and get a nice workout in, and that's all I can control.
So, all right, people, I'll be honest, the timeline of this kind of screwed me up because I was just more concerned with the Astros and everything else like that. People are interpreting that as evidence that he 100% wanted to get traded or was going to get traded. It was after that interview that morning, sometime after that, he requested a trade, as reported by sources, and that the Raiders have said that they'd be open to trading him for a second rounder plus additional compensation.
Yeah, the only thing I've seen is developing story this morning on TV. Raiders are open to trading Devontae
Adams.
Is it
possible that Kay Adams herself pushed him over the edge in terms of...
I think he was already there.
Because I'll say, honestly, it's a disingenuous answer if he did indeed ask for the trade. Yeah. Obviously, he's got some control. I think if he at some point had said, no, I'm Raiders till death, this is the team. Remember when I got traded here and I said this was perfect because it was the team I followed when I was a boy. And all
playing with Derek Carr.
Yeah.
College team.
So he does have control over the situation. Now, the Raiders are going to have to make a decision on him in the offseason anyway because he's got a $35 million bonus or guarantee that triggers. So they were either going to have to cut him, trade him, or redo his deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably inevitable that it's going to happen. Do they pull the trigger on it as soon as possible then? I mean, they're not entertaining any thoughts about him being a part of a comeback.
Yeah, I think some of it probably factors in. Like if the Raiders, who, you know, you're only 4 weeks into the season, so you don't want to, you're not going to openly say you're punting on the season, but the Raiders are probably having more honest conversations behind the scenes about what exactly they look. They're a not very good football team who has Gardner Minshew as their quarterback right now.
And Devontae Adams is on what basically is a one-year deal just because of the way it's structured.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're a team that trades for him, at least you do have some, hypothetically, some control over him because he still has years remaining on his contract.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this would end up being, if it was for a second rounder and then additional compensation, this would be a lot like the Diggs trade.
A lot like
this
the Diggs
trade. This would be an older guy on what ends up being a one-year deal in the case of Stephon Diggs. And I think there will be multiple teams very open to that. It's a question of whether, are the Jets one of those teams?
Jets are the favorite. So I've got the odds board in front of me here. Jets are the favorite at even money, 1-1 to land Devontae Adams. And the reasons are obvious. Aaron Rodgers loves Devontae Adams. Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback in New York. And what Aaron Rodgers wants, generally speaking, it appears Aaron Rodgers gets.
Yeah.
In New York.
Played
four games and four snaps for them.
And when he was having discussions with the Jets before the trade, he had his list of things that guys he would be interested in having on the team. Alan Lazard was one of them. Alan Lazard is now a Jet. Randall Cobb was one of them. Randall Cobb came to the Jets. So
got his OC, Nathaniel Hackett.
Davante Adams was on that list too. I'm guessing it was above those other two receivers.
I would hope so, right? I'd really question his power rankings.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel it's almost an inevitability at this point that the Jets sign, because they've done everything else to try to build things and put things around Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And like this one just makes sense. I mean, Rodgers took that pay cut so you could make moves like this. One of those moves that they did make was trading for Hassan Reddick, but that's currently, and they're responsible for his salary right now too.
Right now, Hassan Reddick has to show up to actually get a game check, so they haven't had to pay him anything.
But there's but he's still got on his contract is still the dead money and everything is all still there.
Yeah, three of the top four teams on the odds board for Davante Adams are AFC teams. How would you feel if at 5-1? Davante Adams landed with the Kansas City Chiefs, who have all kinds of wide receiver issues right now. Hollywood Brown out. Rashee Rice looks like out for the year.
Yeah.
And it was already a group that was not as good as it was at its peak with Tyreek Hill there. Travis Kelce looks like we're going through another season of debating whether or not he can flip a switch when the playoffs roll around.
Except that he looked like he got back, but he's old. He's 35 years old. And like at some point,
this is who he is.
At some point, he's not going to be able to just get it together for the postseason.
Right.
So,
right.
Davante Adams.
To the Chiefs.
I don't know. I thought that would dredge up something in me emotionally, but I think I'm in a dead zone with the Chiefs where I just kind of wait and see.
Okay.
Like, all right, this is who they are. At some point, I'm not going to sit here and act like, well, yeah, their window will be brief or what have you. But if all of those other issues for the Chiefs this year actually really do come home to roost and that they can't make the same push in the playoffs, Davante Adams could be not the one magic bullet for all of that. But, yeah, I would what Pat Mahomes could do with Davante Adams.
Yeah,
in the
playoffs. And obviously we're looking at this through a Texans prism. Like, you know, the Texans trying to compete with these teams to get to the Super Bowl. Steelers at 6-1. That does not scare me.
No.
The Steelers at 6-1.
I know the crack squad of NFL insiders that so thoroughly botched the Brandon Ayuk to the Steelers story will be also the ones covering this. So I don't expect to believe a damn single thing I hear about how close Davante Adams is to getting traded somewhere.
God, Ayuk's been so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. $30 million a year.
So at least Davante Adams was in training camp and everything.
That's true. Here's an interesting one, and this is one that doesn't impact the Texans at all, unless you meet him in the Super Bowl. But this team might get the Peter Schrager fun young team, Ben.
Texans are this fun young team.
The Washington Commanders. Washington Commanders are second on the odds board for Davante Adams.
Yeah.
Now we're four games in, and they are starting to hit the meat of their schedule here.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they played any division games yet. I think the Commanders' schedule, I don't think they play a division game till like week 11, and then they play them all like in the last 2 months of the year. But Jaden Daniels.
He's doing it with Terry McLaurin, Noah Brown. they're doing some impressive things. And we've seen this out of Cliff Kingsbury offenses before. Take the league by storm with a young quarterback early in the year. But then over time, they start to become predictable.
Yes.
It's hard to be predictable or as predictable when you've got Davante Adams out there.
Remember how impressive CJ was his first four games last year?
Yeah.
You know, they were 2-2, but he had the big game statistically against the Colts. Then they blew out the Jags by 20, and they blew out the Steelers by 24, and CJ was the toast of the league. Jaden Daniels is having a better first four games in his rookie year than CJ did last year.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that's how good he's been.
In terms of completion percentage, he's the best that's ever played the game of football.
Ball does not hit the ground.
This is the first time anybody's had over 75% completion rate over the first four games.
And he's over 80.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And they score touch, man. They score points.
Well, putting each of the games over 75%.
Oh, each of the games. Yeah. Okay, yeah. His total completion percentage for the season, I think, is over 80% right now. It's wild, man. Davante Adams to the Commanders.
I guess the only other part, I wish I knew whether he had an actual injury or not, just because I expect that the soft tissue injury that he has right now that
is like a Jalen Ramsey
held him out of the
thing.
Game. Yeah, that like, it'll mysteriously vanish as soon as he finds himself in a new climate.
Yeah, yeah.
The desert air. That's what caused it. Now that I'm in New York with this balmy weather, this is that's exactly what I need.
Texans 33-1 on the odds board. He will not be. I'm sure. I don't even want to look at the text page.
I was honestly
go after Davante Adams.
I was honestly really surprised that anybody asked that question. And I know that there's always somebody that's going to weigh in with something, but I was surprised that I saw several people ask that question. It would be an extreme shock and surprise if they did that. They no, they've got issues elsewhere. The wide receivers, even though the production hasn't been the air show that everybody was hoping for or anticipating, the wide receivers are the last thing that's a problem on the team right now, other than the health of Tank Dell.
We should go after Davante Adams, a text message. We should go after Davante Adams to keep him away from the other teams.
Yeah.
I'd give Woods, Mechie, and a third round pick.
Well, you're not going to get – that's what – yeah, you won't get him for Woods, Mechie.
I would do that trip. Forget about keeping him away from the other team. If that's the price, Woods, Mechie, and a third-round pick, I would go get Davante Adams.
Now, the second-round pick, I do think they'll get a second round for him.
I do, too.
Now, the Raiders just threw it out there that they'll accept the second-round pick. I wonder if – I mean, usual operating procedure, they might – You might, if you're going to say it publicly, say you want a first round pick. Mm-hmm. They might be more realistic and think that, okay, we can get it. We can get a little bit of a bidding war going between a few teams if we start at the second round. Just create it more like an auction effect.
Oh man, Jets
a second round. I think there are a lot of GMs that hear first round. They're like, all right, I'll worry about that when the price comes down. They hear second round pick and the juices start, the gears start going in their brains.
And the Packers are 10-1. I hope they trade him back to the Packers. And Aaron Rodgers is like, hey, well, what?
He didn't have any acrimony.
No,
when
I know.
He left. Yeah,
just to stick it to Aaron Rodgers, I hope they trade him back to the Packers.
But yeah, but even in the drama there, that was almost you got the sense that Rodgers and the Davante Adams and Rodgers were kind of on the same page on that one. I think Davante Adams knew that Rodgers really wanted to get the hell out, and it wouldn't have mattered if he stayed or not.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I don't feel like. For Rodgers, it was always about, okay, why are you not either A, drafting receivers in the first round, or B, giving me some kind of a defense?
Right, no, I know. If he doesn't wind up on the Jets, that would be hilarious if he wound up back with Green Bay. Like, Aaron would probably be all in his feelings about that, about Davante going back to Green Bay. He'll be a Jet, no doubt, someone says. Even money, you know, we'll see. The Chiefs salary cap is like New Orleans salary cap right now, somebody says. I haven't looked, but if that's the case, then Davante Adams probably isn't.
They'd have
to
get really funky with it and do some things. And I don't, again, that's where the Chiefs and the Bills are the two least likely teams, partly because of that dynamic.
Yes.
That they consciously shed guys just like they've shed guys. Stephon Diggs is a lot like Davante Adams right now in terms of age and all that.
Yes.
And now that he has 1 year remaining on his contract, or this is the last year on his contract, Stephon Diggs, it's very similar. And then Tyreek Hill, the Chiefs just said goodbye to Tyreek Hill for salary cap reasons more than anything else.
All right, I'm going to see if I can find some good nuggets in this Stephon Diggs, Jeremy Fowler article that just dropped on ESPN, and we will get you ready for today's game between the Astros and the Tigers. Season on the line, what's at stake today? We'll talk about that. As we hand things over at the top of the hour to In the Loop. Stay there.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so Jeremy Fowler has a very, very, very long story about the Stephon Diggs to Houston saga. A lot of it dips back into Diggs' time in Minnesota. Lays out a lot of the stuff that we've talked about on this show exhaustively over the last several months about how things ended in Buffalo. How things ended schematically for the Bills offensively, where Stephon Diggs was with that, how much does he have left in the tank, all those things. I'm going to skip down here just to the parts that are about the actual trade. Well, I'm going to skip down to the part where the Texans show up in the picture, because I think that's what most people listening to the show are interested in, given the fact that I haven't had a chance to really read this article in full.
Mm.
Buffalo had no intention to ship Diggs away originally, a team source said, but inquiries had been rampant even before the turbulent 2023 season. Because things started to, this is me talking now, things started to go downhill at the end of 2022.
Right.
In that playoff game against the Bengals where Diggs is gesturing and going crazy on the sidelines. Executives from several receiver-needy teams confirmed they didn't hear from Buffalo this past offseason shopping Diggs. The Bills were on the hook for Diggs' contract. Either way, there was no cap relief available by dealing him, and we should point that out. I mean, the Bills took a $30 million cap hit to trade Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
While team sources were not able to confirm whether Diggs officially requested a trade, they agreed Diggs was open to a change of scenery. Quote, if he's not happy somewhere, he's smart enough to maneuver his way out. added a team source, quote, "It's a normal thing for veteran guys at that stage of their career to be attracted to something new. I think there was some attraction to Houston for Stephon."
We're the hot young girlfriend.
I guess so.
All of a sudden. We're the tempting administrative assistant.
Texans are this fun young
team. You're a fun young team. Yeah, they're a fun young team. Fun young team. Thank you, Ben. They talk about the Pro Bowl in February. Diggs acknowledged at the Pro Bowl, quote, "There's a lot of changes going on in Buffalo. I can't tell you what the future holds." Then come the cryptic tweets in March, on March 15th. "Ready for whatever." March 25th. A day later, he says, "Well, ... March 25th, just tweets, "Being diligent."
Yeah.
April 3rd is when the trade went down, by the way. So it was about a week after all these tweets. Whether motivational fodder or coded trade talk, these messages felt eerily similar to his social media habits before he was traded from the Vikings, the article says. Mm-hmm. The belief in league circles is the Texans were committed to getting an established veteran receiver this offseason. They first tried with Keenan Allen, who's traded from the Chargers to the Bears on March 14th. A source close to Allen said the Texans got, quote, "very close to dealing for the receiver."
And we figured it was probably just a matter of they might have offered the same round, but the Texans don't pick as high in the draft as the Bears probably would be expected to. Yeah.
Yep. Once that fell through, the Texans pivoted to Diggs. Word out of the Bills locker room started to trickle out in mid-March, in line with the vague Diggs tweets, that Houston was a possible destination. Those who know Texans GM Nick Caserio were not surprised by this. "He scours the market for opportunities," a Texan source said, "using personnel meetings to discuss players that could be available due to a litany of factors." Quote, "I think Caserio saw the writing on the wall with Diggs in Buffalo," end quote.
I do like that Caserio, kind of like with Daryl Morey, it seems like if a trade happens, it's unlikely that he didn't know that it was a possibility. You know, like with Daryl Morey trading for James Harden, other teams could have made that trade. Part of it was just everything developed so very quickly that Morey was just Johnny on the spot because he's always there and he's always willing to talk and everything else. I think people probably look at Nick Caserio that way. There might be a lot of like, let's float this by Nick. I don't know. You know what? And you know what the other thing is? If there's one thing the Texans have demonstrated over the last couple years since Jack Easterby left the building, it's that they keep things close to the vest. It seemed like the damn near whole football world was convinced the Texans weren't even going to take a quarterback. C.J. Stroud didn't know that the Texans were going to take him.
He didn't think they were going to.
Right, yeah. He didn't think they liked him.
Yeah.
So they play it very close to the vest. So what that helps is, you got some GMs like Chris Ballard that want to publicize all their business to the world. Caserio's not that way, and I think that you can have a conversation with Caserio and it never leaks out from an undocumented source or anything. So maybe the guy that people assume you would never think about trading because he's so beloved and what have you, you talk to the Texans about it at least, because it won't get out.
Yeah, absolutely. The Bills had several factors to navigate. They had to negotiate the parameters of the deal. Houston and Diggs would also need to renegotiate his contract, wiping out the final 3 years to make him a free agent in 2025. Buffalo would need to grant permission for Diggs camp and the Texans to talk before a trade commenced.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a Deshaun thing going on where you know we got to get permission so we can find out where, obviously for different reasons, where this guy's head's at.
The way Fowler lays it out there, though, too, it's that, and it does make me feel good. I assumed this is probably what it was that the renegotiated deal was known about before the trade. It wasn't like Diggs showed up and said, "No, I'm not actually signing into you, or I'm not going to play until you redo the deal."
Yeah.
I think the Texans went into it knowing exactly what the scenario was going to be.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good
because
point.
Because the way it was reported, the renegotiation got reported after the initial trade. So I think some people thought, "Oh, Diggs got traded and then played hardball with the Texans." I think it was already part of the package.
Yep. A decision of this magnitude likely involved Josh Allen, at least indirectly. This is the article continuing here. While the team's exact communication with Allen about Diggs' future with the team is unknown, one team source believes, quote, "Allen is at the point that they aren't going to make any important moves like that without letting him know," end quote. I believe that, probably.
Well, without letting him know, but did they actually ask him opinion? It's hard. Most good GMs and coaches know that they're putting a player in a tough position when they ask him about the specific personnel move. So I could see Because I know some people say, like, of course, why wouldn't they discuss it with Josh Allen? Because it puts a quarterback in a position of, you kind of set a precedent of, like, this is the guy that gets guys fired, or this is a guy that I can't trust, or whatever. So they try to keep it, a lot of front offices try to keep the quarterback not involved with any of the actual dirty work of it. Now, that does lead to, now there's opportunities for discussions about, you know, how are things going, what is all this and all that. But I wouldn't be surprised if they might have notified him that it was happening, but I don't know if they actually, like, consulted him about whether or not they should do it.
Right. Yeah. If they got his opinion on that. The trade ended up being Diggs and a couple day three picks for the Vikings' second round pick, which all of a sudden is not looking like a great second round pick, at least early on this year.
That's supposed to be a good JJ McCarthy taking some
rookie
lumps.
Not our problem. Would Buffalo have dealt Diggs if it didn't receive an offer as good as Houston's? One team source was not aware of a hard line on hypothetical trade terms. Another said it was the right time to move on and believes the parties probably would have found a way to part amicably, even if it meant Buffalo shopping Diggs more aggressively. So this article makes it sound like, this article makes Nick Caserio sound like the aggressor in this, to the extent that it implies here that Houston may have been the only one that was offering anywhere close to what the Bills ended up getting.
At that moment, yeah.
Yeah. So Diggs called his experience in Houston, quote, a breath of fresh air when he met the media for the first time as a Texan in June. Quote, you thrive in a space where you're loved, thrive in a space of being around those who truly care and truly want to see you win. End quote.
Yeah. So that's an easy one to try to interpret as shade at Buffalo or whatever.
That was back in June.
Yeah, in that press conference, he was very much taking a tone of being very civil towards the Bills and everything. So I don't think he meant anything by that. He did say that, like, he could read the writing on the wall, that, you know, they probably didn't have him in their long term plans. And it was a reset year for the Bills last year.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I mean, all of this might have all still happened, even if Diggs had never spouted off on social media at various points, even if they'd never had a sideline eruption.
Yeah.
It might have just been the right football thing for the organization. So that's the part with Diggs that I really think he's one of these complicated dudes who is probably awesome 97% of the time. It's just that when he has to go off on social media or whatever, and over time, those people start to, you're taking withdrawals from the emotional bank account every time you do it.
Well,
you know, you do it, you have one outburst or one cryptic tweet, and it's like, all right, well, listen, smooth it over, whatever. But when it just becomes over and over again over the course of several years, that's when it wears on you.
And the one thing they say early on in this article, Seth, is that, and I don't have the energy to go back and forth, this is a long article. Let me just warn you before you read it. It is a long article.
Got to make up for Zach Lowe.
That's right. They say in here, like, Diggs remembers everything that is said to him and promised to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, so he remembers everything, you know, so there was probably things,
like, not in a good way
said along the way. Well, you know, good or bad. If you're someone who holds up your end of the bargain, then it's probably great. Through 4 weeks, Diggs is number 3 on ESPN's receiver scores list, which is a composite metric that distills a wide receiver's ability to get open, make catches, accrue yards after the catch.
Yeah.
The Texans are making Diggs' place in the offense a priority in a way that wasn't happening his final days in Buffalo.
I think also the big thing to remember with Diggs is that, A, going into the season, I said over and over again, don't expect three 1,000-yard receivers. It's not even necessarily a good thing if you do have three 1,000-yard receivers. It would mean probably that you weren't ahead in that many games to be like that. And it's very, very rare for it to happen. So it wasn't going to be all pro caliber seasons out of all three guys. One thing that a lot of people have said over the last few weeks is, man, where would this team be without Nico Collins? And that's true. But Nico Collins would not be having this season if Stephon Diggs weren't on the roster.
Yeah.
Teams wouldn't have to play so much cover two shell stuff. And Nico would be getting a lot more man coverage. He'd be getting bracketed a lot more. Diggs is opening things up for not just Nico, but for others. Like some of the tight end passes and the receiving passes, at times those have been against zone where a cornerback has been cheated pretty aggressively over towards Stephon Diggs. So I'm totally happy with his effect so far on the offense. It's the run game and the lack of a counterpunch in a lot of ways that's been more disappointing to me, but that doesn't have anything to do with Diggs.
Diggs is third. Collins is fifth on those ESPN composite receivers. So Diggs is actually ahead of Nico when it comes to...
Man, Nico's got to pick it up. Tired of this. Tired of this, Nico. Tired of this underperformance, damn it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
On the metric that I just learned about its existence, yes.
Nico number one in yak. Yards after catch.
That's not a shock. He was number one in yak last year, too.
Yep, broken
tackles. By a healthy margin in terms of per catch. His yardage after catch was very, very good. Oh, no, broken tackles last year.
Broken tackles.
He led the league in broken tackles after the reception, not yak.
Let's go out to NRG Stadium where the fellas from In the Loop, Reggie Atatula, John Lopez, they're out in the, I'm assuming, in the West Club at NRG Stadium.
Well, yeah, they're at the stadium because there's a playoff game today.
We've got...
So they're at NRG Stadium before a playoff game.
Right,
there we go.
Right.
That's all you need to know.
Did we make it to the right stadium? Are we in the right place for the playoff game?
No, but just stay there. Hang there.
Yeah, they said, somebody told,
I told Reggie, turn right, dude. Turn right, not left.
My bad. And let me be, I was a little hard-headed.
Let me just be clear, too, because they are at NRG Stadium. They didn't go to the wrong place. It doesn't have anything to do with the Astros. We have a big, huge company meeting going on today out at NRG Stadium. That's why they're there.
Yes. Those, you guys thought you were going to get out of it, but no.
Nope.
You're going to be there.
You're going to do your show from there. You got to be on. Yeah, you got to be on.
Yeah. Yeah, they're facilitating that. But you know what? I'm good with it because we get to watch the stadium get prepared for the H-Town game. And it is enthralling. I don't know. We might do play-by-play for
we
a
might. This is
what's about, going on?
What's happening on the field right
what's
now.
Happening?
They're putting the H-Town logo, the H-Town blue, the end zones are, or they're working on them as we speak. The midfield logo, it's going to be sweet, man. It's going to look really cool.
Have you taken any pictures of this while it's going on right now?
You know what?
Oh, I'm very selfish. I didn't think about letting anybody else see this. I was just going to experience it myself.
Yeah. You guys
might not want that out there yet.
Yeah, that's true. So hold off on that. Yeah, that's just, I just you can show the pictures to me.
No, that was what I was considering. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. How you fellas feeling about today? Not our meeting up there. The Astros game at one.
Sorry, Sean. I'm just thinking about a half-finished field tweeted out to the masses feels a little bit like new helmet in a shipping facility.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Never mind. Don't do anything, guys. How are we feeling about today?
You can finally say the words that generally I despise when people use them. Must win.
Mm. Okay.
Yes.
Your world is whole now, John.
Right, though,
my world is whole. Okay. It drives me nuts when people, tomorrow's a must win. Are they playing the next day? Yeah, they are. Well, then it's not a must win. This one? Must win. How am I feeling? Boy, mixed emotions. And I know you guys probably are feeling much the same because there's reason to be optimistic in there. But then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it is just one game. And they're going to throw everybody at you.
This is Hunter Brown's moment, man. This is where you take your role as ace of this baseball team. You grab Framber by the throat and you toss him aside and say, I'm the ace of this baseball team. Okay. That's what's at stake today, man. That and us not having anything to do for the next 3 weeks, which will feel really weird baseball-wise.
And, and so you guys know, Reggie, so you know, you're not familiar with this. Every now and then in the playoffs, Sean and I put a hex on a player.
Yeah.
And it's damn near 100% effective.
Works a lot, yeah.
We don't do it that often because they don't want to use up all of the power and the force of it.
Yeah.
Today's hex, we're going to find out very quickly how effective it was because we put it on the opener, Tyler Holton.
Yep.
Who usually doesn't go any more than two innings and not even two complete innings. He's the opener. So if the Astros lineup can tag him with three or four runs right off the bat, you can thank us tomorrow.
Yep.
Okay.
I will.
Definitely will. What went into the decision-making process there on who would get the hex?
You know what? We usually take some input from the listeners on the text page, but at one point during the segment, Seth just stood up and started screaming that we were hexing Tyler Holton.
Yeah.
And that's what went into it.
And I felt the spirit, and I just kind of started speaking in tongues and everything.
Yes.
Yeah. And okay. It's a really intricate process. It needed to be Tyler Holton.
That's right.
Nobody else.
So it was a divine mandate. Okay.
The hand of God reached down and said, yes, say it.
God's not quite involved in this, but yes, supernatural
the gods.
Forces.
Yeah,
yes.
The baseball gods. All right, gentlemen. Well, we're going to see you out there in a little bit.
Excellent.
Looking forward to the show today, man. I know it's going to be a lot of Astros, a lot of Texans, and we're excited to hear what you guys' thoughts are on yesterday's game, which we will get to in about 15 seconds as I tell you that you're listening to KILT and KILT HD2 on Odyssey Station. Seth, antibodies to
you. Antibodies and good hexing to you.
Thank you, my friend. We are done. We are out of time.